Hey guys, it's James Chester here. You're listening to the Gather Round the Lamp podcast by underagaslitlamp.com.
Gather Round the Lamp, an Aston Villa podcast.
Instead it goes to Bailey!
Villains, and gather round for this week's episode of Gather Round the Lamp, an Aston Villa podcast brought to you by underagaslitlamp.com. Now, be honest, did anyone genuinely think the events of the last few days were possible? I don't think I believe you, but we'll try and make some sense of it if we can. I'm your host, Andy, and this week, first of all, joining me, James. Welcome back on.
Hi, Andy. Thanks. Christmas has come early to be six, isn't it? 6 points from Santa just before Christmas. Again, not sure that was what anyone was expecting, but never look a gift horse in the mouth is something I was always taught. So, yeah, very happy to be on and talking about that.
Yeah, good to have you. And also, we've got a bit of a guest. Cole Petham from the Hulkcast is with us this week. Welcome, Cole. I think this is our first time recording together. Known each other a little while, but first time on the podcast, I think.
Yeah, I think they say it's good things come to those who wait. So I'm sure this will be a good time. Thanks for having me on, guys.
No problem at all. And good to have you along. It's been a pretty special week, really, hasn't it? And it's really good to catch up with it. Obviously, I guess yourself and your crew, Cole, have been over the Man City game in some depth, probably the Arsenal game too, actually, by now. So we'll obviously touch on both games. It's been an incredible week, and we'll try and put it into some sort of context. But of course, it was Man City at Villa Park on Wednesday night. I mean, lots of fans describing this, I think yourself as well, Cole, as Villa's probably the best performance they've seen some fans in their lifetime. It's been so long since Villa were in this kind of position. I mean, Villa racked up 22 shots to City's 2, which kind of half tells the story, but it was the sheer domination, wasn't it, of Aston Villa, and you know, really did something to City, Cole, that I don't think we've seen anyone do to City or indeed a Pep team in the past.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think the last team we beat, City, would have been 3-2 at Villa Park, Andy Vyman getting the winner. So it's been over 10 years. A lot of things have happened in the world across that 10-year decade span. And I mean, we could list off a million things there. But I mean, with that particular performance, you would have thought that Villa were the team that just came off the treble. Probably the most complete performance, I mean, hopefully not, I've ever will see in the future. Hopefully there's more to come, and I'm sure under Lord Unai there definitely is. But all in all, I mean, you sit back and you look at it from the back to the front, Emi Martinez with those two massive saves to kind of keep that momentum, keep that mindset strong. And then, of course, leading all the way up to the top, you look at Ollie Watkins, Leon Bailey stepping in and really imposing his will. And I'm sure we'll kind of have a little bit of a love fest on him very shortly. But I mean, all in all, one of the best performances that I've ever seen. And long may it continue.
Yeah, absolutely, James. We were at the game. It was some atmosphere on the night as well, wasn't it? Sort of going into the game, even.
Well, I think there was a bit of sort of talking around, sort of a few fans in the days leading up. There was a bit of nervous anticipation about the game, wasn't there? I think there was a feeling. I know it's easy to say in hindsight. There was a feeling that something was cooking. And yeah, sure, we've had results like that over the years against the sort of top teams in the league, in the country, sort of home wins. I mean, there's several you can reference, but that's not what we're talking about, is it, here? It wasn't the fact that we managed to beat Man City 1-0. It was the fact that we absolutely dismantled them. I remember thinking after 10, 15 minutes, as you say, Andy, Villa Park was absolutely rocking, which, credit to the manager, the players, a lot of them have referenced and sort of thank the fans for that, and it was a special atmosphere Wednesday. But yeah, sort of, I think after sort of 10, 15 minutes, there was sort of the realisation that not only were we going toe-to-toe, but we had them rattled, and they never really got a foothold in the game, never really got going. And that was down to Villa and how they were playing. And it's a game which I think will live long in the memory for everyone who was there that night, and obviously all the fans around the world sort of following the game as well. So yeah, unbelievable night.
Yeah, it sort of started right from the off, really, didn't it? And I know sort of Luca Dean got in, had a shot, hit the side netting early on, but then it was kind of, I don't know, it felt like about 10 minutes in that City might start to get a bit of joy when Haaland went through Foden's ball, I think, and Martinez ended up making that tremendous double save, first from the shot, and then as the ball came back in, he header from, you know, probably 3 or 4 yards out, and he got down and saved it. And that's all he really had to do in terms of that kind of shot stopping all night. Cole, it was really unusual to see Man City, you know, almost camped in their own half, unable to get out at times for long swathes of the game. At times, just could not get out, and it was almost, you know, Villa were doing to Man City what Man City have done to teams for so many years.
Oh, 100%. You would have thought that the City players were actually wearing Villa shirts with how camped in they were. They're giving away the ball immediately, getting it back in terms of Villa. The one telling thing of all of that possession was the fact that Erling Haaland at times was almost playing as an extra center back and had to make, I think, what was it, 3 kind of clearances to just kind of clear their lines. And I've never seen a striker of his caliber have to come back and defend and kind of, I don't know, impose his will is probably the best way or worst way to say it, but to really take him off of one mindset of attacking and actually force him to defend. And that's something he's not comfortable to do. And really that, if anything, probably shows that fits Villa's game plan more often, putting players in uncomfortable situations. I mean, we talked about Emi Martinez. You look at the team as a whole. I mean, maybe even one player we should mention at some point is John McGinn, especially over these last 2 games. I mean, I'm sure we'll even have another love fest. There's a lot of love fest going around. I love doing saying that word. And I'm happy to say it around Villa, but I mean, what a shift he put in particular. I can't get over it. He's the perfect captain for me. And he just really exemplifies everything that I want to see in a Villa captain and a Villa player.
Yeah, I'd echo that. I thought Wednesday night was one of the best games I think we've seen from McGinn. And I think he just epitomizes the side at the moment, the energy. He's snapping at the ankles of the opposition all the time. I've seen someone, I don't know if it's just been coined this week, but I've seen coined the term brave ass for him, which I think is very suitable, because he's just, once he's got the ball, it's so hard to get it back off him. But he was absolutely everywhere. But yeah, it's hard to sort of single, and it doesn't really feel right to single out individual players, particularly after that sort of performance, because it was a team performance, wasn't it? Everyone sort of put a shift in and did what was asked of them. I think the planning from Emery obviously had a sort of game plan to get out Man City, and it sort of, I think that sort of obviously really, really worked.
Yeah, there's a few, like, I suppose, points of note really from the team as well, because I think I was going to ask you both. I'll come to you, Cole, first. Is the centre back pairing of Carlos and Torres, obviously with Konsa moving to right back, which doesn't necessarily sit hugely well with me, really, because I think Konsa's been absolutely outstanding as a centre-back. But what did you make of, over the two games, really, but what did you make of the partnership there with Torres and Carlos?
Well, it's a partnership I didn't know I needed in my life, but to be honest, I'm quite enjoying it. Carlos is an interesting one because I felt like he was basically written off because of the injury issues, of course, coming in under Gerrard, and then just really not being able to find his place for so long, it felt like, under Unai Emery. And pairing him with Pau Torres, you might think initially, maybe that's not essentially the way you want to go in terms of how they both play, but I think they really complement each other very well. Of course, Diego Carlos with the physicality, of course, he's very good on the ball too. And Pau Torres, I mean, enough said, the man could feel, I feel like he's going to score from the halfway line at some point. Just ridiculous in possession, the way he can set things up and really just quarterback from anywhere. I think it kind of stops and starts with Pau Torres in a way as well. I feel like you could put anyone beside him and essentially he's going to excel because he simplifies the game for them so well. He's able to do so many things on the ball that alleviates so much pressure for his fellow center back. And I think that's really what we're seeing here. It's not essentially Diego Carlos having to pick up the defensive slack and the defensive responsibilities per se. But I think really the way that Torres is able to kind of change his game minute by minute, play by play, it's benefiting, whether it's, of course, initially Mings, hopefully, I would love to see him back for the end of the season. If that's even a possibility, I highly doubt it, but you never know. I mean, miracles do happen. We're seeing that with Villa right now, whether it's with Konsa, whether it's with Longley, whether it's with Diego Carlos himself. I mean, even throw, if you want to be bold, Callum Chambers in there at this point. It just feels like anyone sitting next to Torres really does thrive and it simplifies their game, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. And I think the two centre-backs, Carlos and Pau Torres, were both signings that I was hugely excited about when they happened. And I think you're absolutely right. I think Carlos almost diminished in people's minds because of the injury and being away for so long. And I suppose then the nervousness about him getting back up to speed and is he going to be the same player? And I imagine we'll have the same conversations in a way about Tyrone Mings when the time comes. You know, is he ready? You know, is he going to break down again? And Carlos has had, you know, one or two little niggly injuries along the way, which is, you know, perfectly natural after such a huge injury. But I can remember watching him in his first game against Everton when he first signed, and he just looked so comfortable at the back alongside Mings. It just looked like a really great potential partnership, and it's great to see him now playing, you know, two games in a week, which he probably hasn't done for 18 months. You know, it's great to see. But I agree with you about Pau Torres. There's been a lot of talk about perhaps the bits of the game that he doesn't do well, or that people perceive he doesn't do well. People talk about the strength and the aerial ability and that sort of thing. But in my mind, if we're playing how we're meant to be playing in terms of the manager's style, then that shouldn't really come into the equation too much, because if we're playing to what Emery wants, then Pau Torres is controlling the game, James.
Yeah, very much. We were sort of talking about that yesterday, weren't we? Sort of attack is the best form of defence, and obviously in Torres we've got someone who's, I mean, the eye he's got for a pass is just absolutely outrageous. I mean, he picks balls out which I don't think anyone else in the ground has seen sometimes. The accuracy is absolutely sort of world class. But yeah, I think it's just nice that we've got so many options at the back, isn't it? Sort of Carlos coming back in, and they all sort of bring something different, doesn't he? Carlos does, he is a bit more, well, he's got that sort of meat and veg type sort of approach. He has got the physicality to his game. I mean, if we're defending a set piece, you're confident that he's not going to get pushed off the ball. And then obviously in Konsu's having a phenomenal season. Again, a bit like you, I was a bit wary to see him pushed out to right back. Not because I don't think he can do a job there, but just because he's had such a great season so far in the middle at centre back. It just seems almost, well, not sure a waste, but just a bit of a gamble and an unnecessary gamble to put him out at right back. But I suppose when we've got sort of the likes of Carlos, and don't forget obviously we've got Lenglet, on the bench and hopefully sort of Mings to come back in. It's a nice sort of selection sort of dilemma to have, isn't it? And obviously perhaps right back is maybe the one position in the squad where we are a little bit light. Obviously sort of Matty Cash has again had a great season so far, perhaps sort of maybe just gone off the ball a little bit the last week or two, but obviously sort of Cons has sort of slipped into that position, and he's played really well the last couple of weeks there, so I mean credit to him.
Yeah, I mean I think Cons as well, I mean he is good in that position, and he obviously does offer that bit of defensive solidity there, you know, to go into the three when Villa are attacking, which Kamara was dropping into that position more so, wasn't he? Well, when Cash was at right back, so the fullbacks could bomb on. But Cole, what do you think of Konsa at right back? Do you think that's got legs in it, or do you think it's just for a set plan for certain games?
I think it's situational, to be honest. It's difficult because I can see what it offers, and I can see why people also aren't a fan of it as well, because obviously Konsa doesn't have the pace of Matty Cash, and I think that's what a lot of people maybe kind of first look at. The thing I will say about Konsa, his actually placement isn't too bad. Of course, we all thought he got caught out quite a lot and quite often in the Bournemouth game, but if you kind of compare the way that, of course, City and Arsenal play, he probably fits those games. And to be honest, I kind of feel like when you look at the Bournemouth game, Unai Emery would probably even admit maybe he got that wrong and maybe Cash should have played there. Maybe that would have been a little bit more beneficial. I think maybe that's potentially why some people feel that way. I can definitely see it both ways. Of course, it's a little bit dangerous too, because if we do get another center back injury, then it does raise a little bit question marks. I also think, though, maybe this is a sign that in the right back position, that's something maybe is it addressed in January or in the summer? We'll have to wait and see. But I think that's probably the biggest thing that's on my mind in regards to why he's playing there at this moment.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I obviously have to say, I mean, that was kind of my thought, really, that, you know, maybe that's an area they might be looking at, and whether, you know, that's something that Monchi and et cetera are looking at. We'll have to wait and see. But we must talk about the goal, the winning goal from our Jamaican winger Leon Bailey. It was an excellent individual effort, wasn't it? It did feel for a long time like the goal might not come. We were happy. It seemed like one of those perhaps frustrating nights. And the one thing we weren't really doing particularly well was when we got to the penalty area. And got in the final third, and had to make those decisions, and perhaps wasn't the best. So it's probably a fitting type of goal, really. But like I say, individual effort, Bailey sort of running half the length of the pitch to the edge of the box, and then chopping back onto his left foot and onto his right foot. Sorry, and the shot was deflected home past Edison. I mean, the place went absolutely crazy, obviously. But in terms of Leon Bailey, undoubtedly, I would say his best performance in a Villa shirt, and it was really fitting that he was the man to get the winner. There'll always be ups and downs with these type of players, but do you think we're starting to see the real potential of Leon Bailey, sort of the player we thought we'd signed? Or is this maybe, is he exceeding expectations in a way? Has he gone on to kind of the new level under Emery that so many of our players have, Cole?
I mean, he is your prototypical winger, because I can remember in a not too distant past, we kind of maybe felt this way a few seasons ago about Bertie Traore. When will he reach his best? And then we'd see him for a span of games and it'd be fantastic, and then he'd be injured for felt like 6 months and then come back. I mean, of course, he contributed last season into that amazing run we had at the end of the season. But with Leon Bailey, I think it's more so just managing his minutes. And I think that's probably been the biggest issue. And he's also been a victim of course, now on his third Villa manager since he's been here. And those are three different, completely different mindsets and tactics. And I mean, if you say Gerard had tactics, maybe that's being kind, but regardless of that, I think it's about managing minutes with him, getting him in the areas where he can feel like he's most effective, and maybe even just putting an arm around him. I think that's the biggest thing. I think he is definitely one of those confidence players, and it's very evident because, I mean, the way he was playing against City in particular, he was a man on fire. And of course, against Arsenal, he gets the assist to set up the winning goal as well. This is probably maybe one of the best, if not the best period we've ever seen from Leon Bailey. And I think it will continue, but it's about managing his minutes on the pitch, putting him in situations where he can succeed. Because let's be honest, he's not going to be, and at least in my mind, maybe people feel differently, he's not going to play every single game. It's just, it's not going to be a thing.
Yeah, I think he's got some incredible stat at the moment, hasn't he, in terms of his goal and involvements per minute. I think he's... I think he's maybe the top in the league at the moment, or certainly perhaps sort of somewhere around Haaland. He's having a great season, isn't he? I think the Man City game undoubtedly was the best we've seen of him in the shirt. But it wasn't a surprise. I don't think that's been coming. I think it's been slowly building over the last few weeks, isn't it? And he is very much a confidence player, I think. And at the moment, his confidence is absolutely brimmed. And it's just a case of keeping that consistency. Yeah, I think Cole's right, probably the arm around him, and that he does need someone whispering in his ear every so often, telling him how good he is and how he's going to sort of be the best. But yeah, he just looks like someone who's enjoying his football at the moment, doesn't he? Some of the flicks and tricks he's attempting at the moment. I mean, the goal of the little cut back inside to sort of switch feet and sort of send the defender the wrong way to sort of create the space, was, I really enjoyed that. And then obviously, yeah, an emphatic finish, maybe a bit fortuitous, but nothing the team didn't deserve on the night, absolutely.
Yeah, it was a case of that, wasn't it? We did deserve that little break of the ball, I think. And, you know, it was great that it fell to him. I wrote a piece about Leon Bailey for the website a few months ago when he was being linked with moves away. And we'd obviously signed Diaby. I think Buendia was probably still, that was prior to his injury and that sort of thing. So, and there was a lot of talk about Bailey going, particularly going to potentially to Saudi Arabia. And I did write a piece kind of saying, like, he's at a bit of a crossroads where he can choose that option and kind of, you know, go for the financial option, if you like, and you know, head out there and have an easy life and have fun. Or he can make the most of having this incredible manager dropped into his lap who can you know, really take his game to another level and maybe get that level of consistency out of him, as well as the quality that we all knew he had. So it's taken a little while. He's obviously had flashes sort of last season, but also sort of the start of this season, he's really started well. With any of these players, it comes down to a lot to their numbers, and he's absolutely racking up the numbers, isn't he? And he's a really dangerous player. And it's interesting that he's kind of almost taken Diaby's place in the team, having had, you know, such a great start to the season, and now sort of Bailey's certainly level. You choose between them and be fairly confident, wouldn't you, about getting a performance? Although Diaby's perhaps been a little bit off the pace in recent weeks, Cole.
Yeah, it's an interesting one with Diaby in particular, because I felt like, of course, there was a lot of fanfare around him and intrigue initially, and I kind of just wonder personally if he's one of those players that, yes, he had some early success and then he's dipped a bit and then came back. I wonder if there's just more of a kind of like acclimatization for him that we're seeing until he maybe hits that consistent level, because I think it's there for him to be a game in, game out kind of contributor. And I think he does obviously offer loads. And let's be honest, when we did sign him and he initially did start kind of running right away. We kind of wish that was what Bailey was, and now Bailey's turned out to be exactly what we were hoping to be. So I think with a little bit more time with Diaby, I think we're going to see the best of it. And of course, it's going to be the victim of rotation as well. We're just unfortunately not used to Villa having this much squad depth per se in certain areas. And with players coming back and already have come back, I think it's just something we have to get used to. And it's not a bad thing. If Diaby's playing every other game, I don't think that's bad. And if we're still winning, it just means we have a successful squad.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But James, the other aspect to this is the emergence over the last few weeks of Youri Tielemans, who's again, you know, another player who, you know, we looked at the start of the season as thinking, where's he going to fit in? Because he looked really off the pace. But Emery has somehow found a position to kind of get the best out of him and utilise his attributes.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think when he came in, I think I certainly thought he was going to be brought in as sort of competition for Kamara and Luiz in the middle. But that's obviously not really where he's been used the last few weeks. Sort of Emery's started all three of them, which I think a lot of people thought that's probably wasn't going to happen. But he does seem to have finally found his feet, doesn't he? I think it was sort of a bit of a slow start to his Villa career. I think sort of a few fans questioning why we purchased him and what he was doing. But no, I've been really impressed with him in the last few games. As I say, he seems to have found his feet. He seems to be sort of growing in confidence again, developing an understanding. I think we've just been talking about Bailey. Obviously, sort of, I think Bailey and Diaby, when they were playing together, it was nice to see their link at play down that right hand side. But I think the last few weeks, obviously, the substitute Tielemans into that, both the goal against Man City and then obviously the goal against Arsenal, both came from a Tielemans through ball into Bailey down the right, sort of Bailey pushing forward. And then obviously, Man City obviously finished himself, and Arsenal he squared it for McGinn to finish. But obviously, Tielemans heavily involved both goals. And yeah, I think what I like about Tielemans is he's slightly more progressive, isn't he? Certainly than, well, comfortably more progressive than Kamara, probably a bit more progressive than Dougie in the middle as well, doesn't he? He's always sort of looking to move the ball forward with his sort of through balls, particularly. But I think the boy can dribble as well. Showed some really good feet. There was one clip, wasn't there, in the Man City game where I think I can't even describe what he did, but he took the ball away from at least one, if not two, incoming City players when it looked like he was probably going to lose it.
Yeah, and Cole, did you kind of envisage that that Tielemans would kind of take up this role as a hybrid kind of role? It looks like a number 10 sort of off the striker, and then he kind of pops up in that right-sided, you know, of the box midfield area as well, doesn't he? And it all seems really seamless, sort of Bailey pushes on and Tielemans, and they're all sort of interchangeable and you know, move around each other, aren't they? Did you envisage that this would be sort of Tielemans' role in the team?
I mean, initially, after those comments about him not being happy at the start of the season, it made you wonder what kind of future he had, but it was proven to be absolutely nothing. And maybe that shows that people shouldn't believe too much that's in the media at the end of the day. But I think it kind of goes down to his fitness. I kind of wonder near the end of his Leicester career how fit he really was, because if you kind of look at, I mean, this is just me looking, being bored on a Saturday evening and looking at pictures of him at Leicester, and now he just, you can tell almost the body tone, the way he's kind of physically in his stature at this moment. It just, I didn't think he had the legs in him to really perform at this level that maybe Unai Emery wants from him in terms of the running, the tracking back, the kind of quick 1-2s that he's pulling off. We all know it's in his locker, and you know he's going to have that in spurts, but kind of to the degree that he's doing it, I can't remember exactly who it was in the City game, but he outpaced somebody, and I thought, okay, wasn't really expecting that. And of course, these are professionals, and they are quicker than the average person, so maybe that's important to preface that too. But I think that's probably his preferred role. I think we can get away with him kind of maybe sitting back in a 2, whether it's with Dougie Luiz or Kamara. I think that's massively situational. But I think him further forward is where we're going to see the best of him. He has a good shot at him. He's clearly a fantastic creator. And I think all in all, if you want to have him succeed in this side, that's where he has to be.
Yeah, I tend to agree. And I think credit to Emery, isn't it, for kind of, you know, fitting him into that system. Because I think at Leicester, he would have played as a number eight or one of two number eights, potentially, you know, in front of Ndidi, sort of behind the front three sort of thing, wouldn't he? And he'd have those, you know, those midfielders around him. Whereas, you know, playing in a two, he did look a little bit uncomfortable and a little bit off the pace from what we're sort of used to with Luiz and Kamara. So, I mean, to actually, you know, have the wherewithal to... I'm continuously surprised by Emery. I should stop being surprised, I think, at this point. But he just seems to have an answer for every problem that comes up. I mean, we were watching at the Legia game. We were treated to another performance of Robin Olsen. And even Robin Olsen, you know, from going a year ago when he just looked like a rabbit in the headlights trying to play this style of play out the back, he just looked so much more comfortable in that position. And that's presumably from working on it and being, you know, Emery sort of showing that confidence in him. But this is what he seems to do to all the players. We've seen so many players, you know, just excelling themselves to what we thought, and Tielemans is certainly one. But I was watching him and sort of thinking, this is to him, this is where he belongs, playing against the best teams in the country, because he's used to that in his career, isn't he? He is an elite player, and you know, he seemed like a bit of a misfit up to now, but he's really gone onto another level, hasn't he? As with Bailey, I mean, Luca Dean, you know, the list goes on and on, doesn't it?
That said, so talking about him playing further forward, though, I'm pretty sure Dougie picked up his fifth yellow on Saturday, so may need him to play the number eight next week at Brentford.
Yeah, very possibly. But this is the great thing, what you were saying about having the squad, you know, just being able to do that and move the players around, and they all seem to fit in and know their job and know what they're meant to be doing, which is fantastic. That said, when it came to Arsenal at home on Saturday tea time at Villa Park, it was the same team selection, no changes. I think I was possibly a little bit surprised by that. Cole, were you at all surprised that he kept the same team, given the, you know, what that Man City game must have taken out of the team?
It's kind of tricky, because you can say hindsight's a wonderful thing, but then you also keep in mind as well that we play Thursday and then Sunday again. So whether, I mean, Unai Emery's going to put importance in every single game. Maybe Villa fans don't feel like Thursday at this point is going to be ultimately that important, because to be honest, I think we will roll them over, or at least get a draw to finish first in the group at this point in time. But with this one, I'm honestly not too surprised. It's one of those things where, do you really fix what's broken? That kind of mentality. You look at Arsenal too, and I think it's important to preface this as well, because you could say, okay, well, it was a very emotional, very hard-fought game against City on Wednesday, and it's a massive result, but fair enough. But Arsenal played almost nearly the exactly same side against Luton and got literally till the final whistle to get a winner. And they got pushed to their limits against a team that's fighting for their lives. So I think it's important to preface that as well, because the things I saw on social media or other podcasters kind of putting out there that, well, it's Arsenal, all this kind of stuff, they'll be ready to go. But I mean, it's literally every few days with these fixtures. It's almost kind of a luck of the draw. Everyone's fatigued. It's just going to be really who can kind of maintain it. I will say one thing, though. I think the substitutions were very well timed and much needed. I just feel like with past managers, we don't need to keep going on about those, me in particular, but I feel like maybe those wouldn't have been taken at those times, and they were definitely needed. I can say that for certain.
Yeah, I definitely thought that, and that was very much, I think, the vibe I got from the fallout to the game was, you know, that, yeah, the substitutions really helped get over the line. But it was an early goal. Never great atmosphere inside the stadium as you'd expect. And we were kicking towards the halt end. I think Arsenal probably turned us around for this one. You know, we haven't been doing that too much more recently. But the move for the goal, it came after, I think it was 6 minutes. Started at the back with Torres again. Diego Carlos involved, and eventually a lovely interchange, as we've mentioned, between Bailey and Tielemans set Bailey away, who produced an absolute, again, brilliant bit of wing play, you know, really kind of really considered, really kind of you know, he really thought about what he was doing, got his head up and picked out John McGinn, who turned and slammed the ball past Raya in the goal. It was a tremendous start for the team. I mean, McGinn has produced, as we've mentioned already again, two exceptional displays this week, and another goal, you know, popping up in the box to finish really well. He's made a bit of a trademark of that this season. And he was singled out on Match of the Day here in the UK for being the first in pretty much all the relevant metrics for the midfielders on the field. He looked pretty gassed at the end yesterday, but he was, you know, still up to his old tricks, you know, winding the clock down and you know, keeping possession and trying to make ground up the field. I mean, I want to talk about McGinn, James, because, you know, he really makes us tick all over the field, doesn't he? I mean, what is it about him that's just so important to this team?
Yeah, I think it's hard to sort of downplay his importance to the team. Is really sort of, as I say, the energy he brings, sort of his pressing. He's sort of, obviously, yeah, he's had sort of, he's been at the club now, hasn't he, about 5-6 years, and it just sort of seems to get better each season, despite a couple of knockbacks. Obviously, sort of he didn't have a great time under Gerrard, and perhaps was sort of hung out to dry a little bit by that manager, and perhaps maybe then you wondered if maybe his Villa career was sort of perhaps had come to the end of the road. But he's really sort of got a new lease of life under Emery, and I think it's that tactical change, isn't it? Sort of Emery's taken him out of the middle of the park a little bit and been playing him sort of out wide, which is just sort of I suppose releases him to sort of pop up here and there, doesn't he? Sort of he's all over the pitch, as I say, sort of he's got that energy, sort of pressing and sort of being a pain in the watsits on the opposition, but then also he's great on the ball, and I don't know, it just seems deceptive sometimes just how good he is on the ball. Sort of is, I say, certainly in terms of keeping the ball, I sort of joke sometimes, sort of you give McGinn the ball on his own and sort of take the other 10 players off, and he'll probably still keep hold of the ball for 5-10 minutes sort of away from the opposition, won't he? I don't know how he manages to do it all the time, but he does. He keeps going and going. I suppose, yeah, the only thing is as you say, sort of was perhaps starting to look a bit gassed, and he probably, more than some others, is probably ready for maybe trying to sit a game or two out if we can give him that opportunity. But yeah, it's hard to do that. Obviously, he's the captain, isn't he? He lives, breathes, he's leading by example. Again, there's an article, isn't he? He's banned talk of the T word in the dressing room. So he may want to have a word with Mr. Martinez, who is a self-proclaimed believer after his Match of the Day interview last night. So, but yeah, no, I love him. I love him. It's just he's a cheeky chappy, firm fan favourite, as was sort of heard round the stands of Villa Park for quite a lot of the game last night.
Cole, do you love John McGinn?
Oh, I mean, see, like, this is, I feel harsh saying this because I love Tyrone Mings so much, but I feel like they're such different leaders in a way. Tyrone Mings has that seriousness about him, but heartwarming nature. I think John McGinn does too, but And I mean, they're both very real in their interviews and how they speak to people, evidently. But I mean, McGinn just brings that extra shithousery and humor that we just all need in our lives. Let's be honest. If you're going to move from Mings to anyone else, I think early on, I was kind of confused by it and wondering what that shift was. But let's be honest, it's probably one of the only good things that Gerard actually did. And I'll maybe give him the one plaudit he could ever get from this, but all in all, fantastic. And maybe he would even admit at this point, I didn't even think he had this level in him. I was always wondering maybe that injury he picked up a few seasons ago, back when we first got promoted, maybe that's kind of hindered his long-term success, but he's went from one level to about 10,000 in advance, because my word, he does not keep stopping. And we talked about this on the Holtcast recording last night with me and Tom, and I do not know if his behind is a superpower in him where he says a word and it just upgrades him to another level. But I mean, if it does, just keep on with it, because it's fantastic to see.
It certainly is. I mean, he's always been a favourite of mine, and I think obviously a lot of fans. We all. And it would have been a sad day if he had ended up leaving. You know, he was, like James says, he was hung out to dry by Gerard. But I think the fact that, you know, Emery obviously saw a lot in him, you know, those first few weeks, and I think that's kind of saved him. But he has gone on to levels that I think none of us knew he had in him. We all knew he was a competitor, he was a battler, he had good ability. I don't think anyone knew that he would be able to dominate a midfield against Man City, and obviously with Declan Rice, he had a good battle with Declan Rice. I think Rice probably came out a little bit on top in the game, but perhaps not the result. But you know, they had a great tussle, and he's up there, isn't he? He's for me one of the best midfielders in the league at the minute, and he's another one who's adding those numbers. He was always good for a goal in the Championship, wasn't he? But since we came up, that's perhaps dropped off a bit. But he scores a lot for Scotland as well. He knows where the goal is, and he's really sort of getting into those areas. He's the archetypal kind of box crashing midfielder, isn't he? And he's really showing it. He's incredible. And yeah, I was shaking my head, James, when you were saying about leaving him out for a couple of games. No, not for me. Maybe if it's enforced, but I certainly wouldn't be leaving him out. And I think he'd be absolutely furious if Emery left him out, to be honest. But no, he's having a great season again. But I mean, this game was really kind of sort of defined by Villa's rearguard action. Really, we couldn't really. Make too many inroads into Arsenal in either half. Arsenal, probably on the balance of play, will perhaps wonder how they didn't get something from the game. It's a mixture of, you know, really poor finishing at times, one or two debatable refereeing decisions, and of course the exceptional form of Emi Martinez in goal that kept them out. Villa struggled, I think, against their press as much as anything, and weren't able to build any fluency with the passing game, which is usually so strong under Emery. As we said, Emery was able to utilise that bench really effectively with Ramsey and Dendonka and Moreno in particular kind of coming on and, you know, playing their part to see the game out. But we've often discussed Villa's defence this season as obviously we've generally kind of struggled to keep those clean sheets with the same regularity as we did last season. But this is two clean sheets in a week against really strong attacking teams in very different circumstances as well. And it will be a huge boost, I'm sure, for the players. From that perspective, Cole, do you think this Arsenal result is maybe more pleasing than the City one? What do you think?
I mean, Unai Emery won't say it, but probably personally it definitely is. It's kind of an interesting one when you look at it. He's faced three Spanish managers in a row. drawn the first one, beaten the bigger two, of course. He's never beaten Pep before this. Now beats his former club in Arsenal. I think for him, that's a massive thing. We know it is for Emi Martinez as well. I think from that perspective, I would say yes, based on the point of view of playing midweek, having that same side, having to, I've seen a lot of the word suffer be thrown around after this one, and Unai Emery's probably said that himself somewhere, so maybe that's where I'm getting it from. But I think from that perspective, because you see the dominance against City, you see us really just kind of digging in and grinding it out against Arsenal, and that's a sign of a good team being able to play two different ways. And I think that's kind of the tell-all tale here, because the one thing I did notice about this, and again, it's just Arsenal fans online, they're an odd bunch. I'll just be completely honest and throw myself out there if they want to have abuse at me. But when you look at, we had 10 shots with 3 on target. They only had, let's see here, 12 shots with 5 on target. It's not essentially like the picture they've painted of they've dominated, and sure, they did in possession with 61%, I think it was. But, I mean, they didn't create a lot of clear-cut chances where you thought, oh, Villa were just absolutely lucky. I think you have to take that kind of in mind as well. And no, there's a, I don't know if you'd say a pinch of salt or just a whole heap of it, but when you have sides like that that want to kind of put that out in the universe, it's important to kind of reflect on the stats as well.
Yeah, definitely. And James, there were a couple of decisions in this one, and we were obviously discussing this a little bit yesterday and before we started recording today. Obviously, there was the penalty shout, Douglas Luiz on Jesus. What did you make of that one?
At the time, from my sort of view in the stand, it was difficult to see really what the issue was. I didn't really think there was anything that warranted the VAR check, certainly that I'd seen at the time. In fairness, I think now I've seen the clip back on Match of the Day, that has changed my view, I think, a little bit. I think I can understand why the ref hasn't given it in real time. I think it's more of a coming together between Dougie and Jesus, rather than a sort of a clear-cut foul. So I could maybe see why it wasn't given, I think, at the time. I think what has surprised me, if I'm absolutely honest, is then knowing that it's gone to a VAR check. And I think given what we've seen, sort of become accustomed to seeing the last season, I've got to say, I think we probably count ourselves a bit lucky. I think it's one of them. I think if the ref had given the penalty on the pitch, VAR is not going to overturn it. If anything, I'm surprised. I think having seen it on VAR now that they didn't say, no, that's a pen. I think we probably did get away with one there, if I'm absolutely honest. But then yeah, there was the second one with the goal, and that one absolutely flummoxed me. From where I was sat, it looked pretty plain and obvious. It had come off his hand in the build-up. I was absolutely astounded, really, that it was taking VAR so long. Again, watching Match of the Day last night, Ian Wright, maybe not unsurprisingly, up in arms. I'll give Ian that one, obviously, sort of Arsenal through and through. But I was a little bit surprised by Gary Lineker's take on it, saying, well, sort of, what's the game coming to? I mean, it came off his hand, I think, 3 times by my count. So, I mean, I'm not quite sure what their issue is. I mean, back to the good old days where, I mean, we could just score with our hands. I mean, I don't know. I didn't really get that one. But yeah, I think we probably did get away one with the penalty. That was my view.
Yeah, I was thinking that Gary Lineker should be very averse to people scoring goals with their hands, shouldn't he? He was in the that famous game back in '86, and I thought he'd have a little bit more perspective on it than that. But yeah, I mean, it was definitely handball, and there is a different level needed, isn't there, in terms of a defensive handball and an attacking handball. You can't have goals scored if the ball's come off somebody's hand, and whether it's deliberate or not, it's not a goal, Cole.
No, it's not. I mean, unless we're playing basketball or they want to mix the two sports together, I don't know what they want to do at this point. I think it's just one of those things where there's so much doubt in terms of spectators with the referees and disbelief, and there's no real honest belief in what they can do and their capabilities. And then, of course, I think VAR to some extent has undermined that massively. And I think that's why a lot of these issues are coming about, because you're second guessing literally, or 15th guessing at this point, it feels like, every single situation. I think it's pretty clear cut. And again, it's the beauty of replay. Everyone's going to look at it 1,000 times. They're going to slow it down to the speed that potentially suits their argument best. It was a handball. And I think it's one of those things where you can say, you know what? It didn't go their way. It touched it with your hand. You move on. At the end of the day, they could have created more opportunities and score, and they didn't. And that's how I look at it.
Yeah, absolutely. And it meant that we managed to see the game out 1-0 to wrap up a really incredible week. I don't think possibly any of us have really, certainly that I can remember anyway, I've seen some great teams at Villa Park, but to beat essentially, you know, who were considered certainly two of the best three teams in the country, one so convincingly and the other one, you know, a bit more of a battle, obviously, but, you know, to come through with two clean sheets as well is quite something. And, you know, it's really, really significant, I think, in terms of this team and what they're capable of. But like I say, I mean, incredible week. And Villa now sit third after 16 matches on 35 points, 2 points off the top. Liverpool are top of the league on 37. These two wins have also broken the club record of 15 consecutive home wins, with our last defeat actually being against Arsenal back in February. It's incredible how many games we've been to and not seen them lose, or even, I mean, this season, even draw. Obviously, this has naturally intensified the talk of Villa's Champions League credentials, and also some people mentioning whether we might be in a title race. Also, James, what are your views on how significant, first of all, this week has been, and are we in the title race, or is it too early? Yeah.
I mean, let's just bask in the victories. I think I think that's 6 points, which will probably live long in the memory, won't it? And no matter where we end up finishing this current season, I think it will probably always be remembered as the season. Well, I say potentially could be remembered as the season where we had these two wins. But I think, I think it's probably a little premature just yet to be having sort of real talk about title contenders. But I mean, we're in the right place at the moment, aren't we? I think you just don't know under this Emery side, do you? I think sort of it's just felt that the bubble's going to burst so many occasions before now up to this point. But yet we're on this phenomenal run. We're breaking records seemingly now, week in, week out. Who knows? I mean, everyone wrote Leicester off, didn't they? Sort of 2015, 2016, oh, they'll never win it. The wheels have come off. So that's the precedent, isn't it? I mean, yes, it just takes... I mean, I think, obviously, Man City... I nearly had another slip-up today, didn't they? The Luton game, that was looking a little bit hairy after the first half. You suspect that they'll come good again and just go on one of them ridiculous runs after Christmas, and sort of it's difficult for anyone to really sort of keep hold of the coattails when they go on those type of runs, doesn't it? And I must say, I mean, as much as we obviously did take the 3 points yesterday, I mean, Arsenal did impress me. They're a good side, and they'll take some beating this season. But I mean, if we can keep this home form going. Sort of, if we can manage to sharpen up the away form, then who knows? I think my only concern, I think my big concern, as much as anything, as well as fatigue, is just I think we could be a couple of key injuries away from disaster. I mean, obviously, I think if the likes of someone like Martinez or Watkins, I think probably the main two. I mean, obviously, we talked a lot about John McGinn, potentially. I think if we were to lose any of those for sort of a significant amount of time, then obviously, yeah, I think we probably would be out of the running. But I mean, in terms of a Champions League finish, then I think that's 100% that's to play for.
Yeah. Are you with that, Cole?
I think so. I mean, part of me still has to be skeptical. And I think that's all because we've lived through so much Villa horror shows over the last decade plus. And I think that's fair enough to say that. But maybe the best way to sit on the fence on this one is to say, you know what? Come the end of December, if we're still in the same position, then I'm believing. Because, I mean, we're not on the same kind of parallel to Leicester in the sense that it was literally the season after they almost got relegated, of course. But I can remember it was probably around this time of the year when they played City and no one believed that they could keep it up. And then they absolutely wiped the floor with them. And then everyone jumped on the train. I'm not saying that's the same situation now, but come the end of the month, if we beat United, we beat Brentford, we go in maybe with a draw or two. I think we're still in the Champions League spots. I think at least you can say we're Champions League contenders. I mean, I'm pretty well comfortable with saying that at this moment in time, but we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, we're definitely Champions League contenders, I would say. But yeah, it's way too early for the title talk, I think. And certainly with the quality of teams that we're up against and the depth of squad that these teams have, Liverpool, obviously Man City when they get some players back, and Arsenal, they're just superb teams. And you know, I think it's going to be very, very difficult to get ahead of them for any length of time. But it's Steve Bruce actually always says, doesn't he? It's when the daffodils come up and when you can smell the sausages. And over here, Cole, that's around March and April. So that's the time where I think I might. Yeah, I don't look at the league table for the first 35 games. That's my that's my philosophy. But
I think it's nosebleed territory, isn't it, as well? And I think what we're in sort of untrod ground with Villa now, aren't we? Like, we've never been this far up the table. For crikey, I mean, I bet you've got to go back to the late 90s, haven't you, for us to really have been mounting this sort of level of consistency. So the squad we've got, apart from sort of perhaps sort of Tielemans maybe springs to mind, that they're not used to it. So it's like, look at Spurs, they hit the top of the table sort of a few weeks ago and sort of completely fell apart. It's different gravy, isn't it, when you get up to sort of rarefied heights, I think. And I think it would be sort of a good learning curve for the squad. But yeah, I mean, it'd be interesting. As I say, there's the added pressure comes with it, isn't it? And I think that's something else to throw into the mix, which obviously the likes of your Man City, Arsenal to some extent, obviously, Liverpool certainly have got that experience on us. But I think if we were to finish sort of sixth or lower, that perhaps would be a little bit of a disappointment from here, I think.
Yeah, possibly. We'll have to wait and see and just enjoy the ride, I think. And with that in mind, we obviously continue this week. Thursday night, 5:45 kickoff. Europa Conference League. It's the culmination of the group phase of that. And we're in Bosnia to face Zrinjski Mostar, who we beat 1-0 in the home match with a last minute John McGinn header, another example of McGinn getting into the 6-yard box to good effect. I mean, given the schedule coming up, this would seem like an opportunity to give some minutes to the squad players, really, and players returning from injury, etc. You know, and getting some more fitness into people. I mean, Cole, what sort of lineup are you expecting for this one?
Well, it's kind of interesting now when you look at Luka Dean and Douglas Luiz missing out, of course, against Brentford. I was thinking they'd be rested midweek, but now I'm thinking they're probably both going to feature. Maybe Moreno and Dean maybe split more of a 60-40 at some point shift, because I think Luka Dean does need a little bit of rest, but I don't think there's really that opportunity now considering this. I mean, you're probably going to expect maybe Olsen to come in. It's going to be Longley at the back. To be honest, I don't really know who they're going to put beside him because you think, I feel like everyone kind of needs a rest. I know you're not going to put Chambers back into the firing line at this point. It's going to be heavy rotation. You'd probably think Duran comes back in as well. Zaniolo too. It's probably going to be very, very, I don't want to say makeshift because I feel like with this side, that's very unfair. But to be honest, even looking at a final result, I feel like even a draw would probably make everyone pretty happy because aside from that, it feels pretty meaningless. Zrinski have nothing to play for unless they want to be spoilers at this point in time. If anything, Warsaw are probably even more panicky at this point because not only just trying to catch us in first place, they also have to worry about Alkmaar behind them. And that's a massive game there, which can go either way. So it should be an interesting one on Thursday.
Yeah, definitely, James. What are you thinking? I was wondering whether, because Tielemans obviously should be fresh as a daisy, really. So he could start in midfield, and maybe we saw that there are games where we're going to need Dendonka, aren't we? So to get him a few more minutes might be useful.
Yeah, I was going to talk about him actually. Yeah, because obviously he came on last night. I thought, apart from one exceptionally wayward pass, I remember, which he seemed to hoof about 30 yards wide of his target. I thought he came on and played well. I mean, I was always quite impressed with him last season. He's sort of steadier way, isn't he? Came on and does a job. Obviously, he was on the pitch at the horror show at Warsaw early in the season. But maybe not fair to sort of single him out that particular evening, maybe amongst a cast of many. I'm kind of torn between, yeah, wanting to sort of give, I'd like to see a few of the sort of the key sort of players perhaps be afforded the rest on Thursday night with I think the fact that obviously I think we need the draw to guarantee top finish, which I think that's important. Obviously, it avoids two additional games then in sort of February, March time, which I think we'll be very glad of by that time in the season. And also, I think perhaps one of the lessons Emery probably learnt from the Warsaw game is, I think, yes, he does need to rotate, but it needs to be controlled. I think he needs to sort of probably, I think he probably learnt that probably four is probably the magic number, the sweet spot for sort of interchanging the first 11. I think more than that, you lose the you just lose that sort of the rhythm of the team, isn't it? So yeah, I think Duran probably for Watkins, maybe Dendonka comes in, Tielemans, Longley at the back, and Olsen, I think, as well. But yeah, I think, yeah, I'd be mindful of making too many more changes.
Yeah, I think that's it, isn't it? It is getting it right and making sure the players are ready for it, you know, because, you know, we can get caught, and these teams, all the teams we played, I think have been good footballing teams. You know, they've all you know, shown some quality, and okay, they've been a bit overpowered by us at times, but that's to be expected. But they all know what they're doing, and if you're not up to speed, they'll beat you, particularly at home. So, you know, it's you've got to be careful.
Yeah, and I think without sounding sort of, I mean, obviously, I don't know if there's any Mostar fans going to be listening to this, without sounding arrogant and patronising, Villa are a big scalp. I mean, yes, Mostar probably don't have too much to play for, but they will want to win this. I mean, if they have a victory at home against Aston Villa in their sort of record books, history books, that's going to be something they'll talk about for probably many years. We are a big fish in this competition. A bit like sort of when we first dropped down to the Championship, it was sort of like it felt like a cup final many weeks for a lot of the other teams we were playing. And I think Thursday night we'll be like that. I'm sure the fans will give us a very warm, noisy welcome.
Yeah, definitely. And we'll await that one with interest. It will be an interesting game to watch, certainly, and see what they do with the team. But then on Sunday, back to the league, and Villa head to perennial bogey team Brentford. And we do have a slightly concerning away record. It's not terrible by any stretch, but it's certainly nowhere near our home form. Otherwise, we would be top of the league for certain. But last time out, Villa sort of snuck a 1-1 draw thanks to Douglas Luiz's equaliser in that game last season. Brentford are still without Ivan Toney, of course, and are on the back of a really bad defeat at the weekend to relegation strugglers Sheffield United, but will undoubtedly fancy another Villa scalp to add to the collection over the years. It feels like every game really is further chance to cement our top four position, and Emery will be keen to back up the impressive wins from this week and continue to rack up the points. Cole, what are you expecting from this one? You mentioned obviously the suspensions, you know, but it's going to be another tricky Sunday afternoon away from home, I think.
Yeah, I think so. I'd be a lot more concerned if we haven't rotated so well this season, but it's important to preface as well from the Brentford perspective. Of course, they'll be without Brian Mbeumo as well, which is their main goal threat majority-wise. And I think in midfield, they'll also be potentially without Matthias Jensen as well, who has probably gone under the radar a little bit. I'm not too accurate on that one, but the last time I did check a few days ago, he was still a question mark prior to the last one. So
yeah, it looks like he's probably 50-50, Cole. I'm just looking now. Yeah, possibly back.
So those are two big hits for them. Of course, they do have Neil Maupay on loan from Everton, and we know how we all feel about him as Villa fans. Probably one of the most annoying players, and he just has that Dwight Gale-ness about him where I feel like he's just going to score against us for some odd reason. All in all, though, very confident. I think the away record can be concerning at times, and it has been. But I just feel like we're slowly starting to correct that. Aside from the Bournemouth result, where I just feel like Bournemouth are massively underrated, to be honest. And they've been going on an impressive run and are one of the form teams in the league as well. I just think that's something under Unai Emery, which has given me probably too much confidence that I shouldn't have. But I think we're going to adjust it. And I think we'll probably add another one here.
Yeah, James, what are you thinking for this one? Are you confident at all?
I don't know. I feel like I should be, but then it just, yeah, I don't know. I think it's a big ask, isn't it? I think, yeah, Brentford's not a place we've travelled to well. I think sort of obviously two big games at home this week. We've got to travel to Bosnia Thursday. I just feels like something's going to give at some point, and I do worry that maybe next Sunday could be a little bit of a hiccup in the sort of the title charge. But but yeah, I mean, I don't know. As Cole said, yeah, I'm just looking at the injury list for Brentford. So in fairness, yes, they are missing several key players of their own as well. So and they're not having a great season, are they? Let's be honest. Poor result again. Yesterday, not many teams have managed to lose to Sheffield United yet this season, but they did manage it. It'd be interesting to see if there's a reaction from them or if they are just in a bit of a malaise at the moment.
Well, I'm feeling more confident. I feel like this week, you know, I think we will go there and back it up. I think we've got more than enough to beat Brentford, and I'm gonna say we're gonna continue that run. Interesting, obviously Brentford and Sheffield United played at the weekend, and they're our next two opponents in the league. Obviously, Chris Wilder's back, isn't it? Sheffield United, so that throws things open a little bit. But yeah, I'm feeling good about the next two or three matches that we have, and if we can go into Christmas in the top three or four, I'd be very, very happy with that. So, I mean, look, we normally do a prediction. No point predicting the Mostar game, I think, because we don't know what the team's going to be. But what are we saying for Brentford, Cole?
I'm going to go, I'll take a 2-1. I just feel like we're not going to keep a clean sheet because it's very Villa to do that this season. So I'll go 2-1.
Yeah, and Neil Maupay, of course, he's going to score. So
yeah, and to be honest, just quickly, I'm more worried about Sheffield United than I am Brentford, and whether that be Chris Wilder and the ghost or the goalpost of luck for us, but maybe horrors in the future. And then you also have Cameron Archer as well. And yeah. I'm slightly concerned about that just biting us. But anyways, enough about that. We can panic about that later.
Yeah, no, good shout that. Yeah. James, prediction?
I'm going to go 1-1, I think. I think I'll take the point right now, I think.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to go 2-0. I think relatively sort of standard away day, I think. And I think I'd be a little bit surprised if we didn't at least get something there. It's the history, isn't it? The history sort of plays on your mind. I must say as well, it's obviously the Dean Smith derby, isn't it? And how brilliant to see Dean Smith with the New York Lions watching the game on Saturday. Absolutely fantastic. I think he's over there. Is he looking for a job over there in the US at the minute? Cole, you might know.
To be honest, I had no clue he was in the U.S. until I saw that. I heard something about Charlotte and the MLS, but then I also saw Frank Lampard was linked, as well as two other people I have never heard of in my life. So
right.
I don't know if he's just enjoying a vacation because New York's not necessarily close to Charlotte. So that's kind of a bit odd. Oh, okay. But yeah. Also, is his son still over there? Maybe that's why. I'm not too sure.
Yeah, possibly.
So,
yeah.
I believe so. Yeah. I think he's still playing out there. But yeah, I was under the impression he was on the shortlist for the Charlotte job.
Yeah, well, no, it was great to see him with the Villa fans, wasn't it? Obviously, enjoying the afternoon. He would have loved that yesterday, I'm sure. It's always good to see Dino. We miss him. Thanks for joining me. Guys, thank you, James, for coming back on, and Cole, thanks for joining us as well. Just quickly, where can people sort of hear your stuff and catch up with you on social media?
If they want to read probably one tweet a week, they can find me on X or Twitter, whatever you want to call it, at Talk Aston Villa. If you want to see majority of the tweets, go to 7500 to Holt, because that's basically me. So if you want a few tweets a day on there, we always put some nice stuff up in there. So any support is always appreciated.
Good stuff. And Holtcast once or twice a week as well. So get subscribed.
Trying to be
to
consistent.
Yeah, absolutely. It's difficult, isn't it? It's not easy. Thanks for coming on, Cole. Much appreciated. And thanks to everyone for listening. Look out for Gather Round again, hopefully this week, with Craig on our YouTube channel, looking back at the Mostar game, hopefully after that, post-match. And that, of course, be available also on all the usual podcast feeds, wherever you get your podcast, that'll be available probably the next day after recording it. And also visit underagaslitlamp.com for recent articles, including one I wrote, my ode to Tyrone Mings as he continues his recovery from horrendous injury. It's inspired by his videos that he's been putting up recently, showing his progress, which is obviously great to see. And give us a follow on the socials as well to keep up to date with all our shows and content on all the social media channels. But great, we'll be back next week, obviously. Check out Craig hopefully at the end of the week, and we'll be back next week to look back at the Brentford game, look ahead to the Sheffield United game and Christmas schedule, and hopefully see you then. But until then, stay safe and up the Villa.